So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
By the MVM Radio Network. I tell you, you know, there's always something going on, plenty to talk about. We never get bored here. We are on waiting for Ed Martin as we speak. He has not shown up yet for some reason. So he's probably just having one of those days at work. And, you know, he builds that job. You know, he owns his own business that Barack Obama built. So, you know, it's a very interesting thing sometimes, because sometimes you just don't know what's going to happen. So, anyway, he should be joining us momentarily, we figure. But in the meantime, lots and lots to talk about. Let's start right here in Louisville. Yes, right here in Louisville. A couple of interesting stories coming out over the last couple of days. One of the most interesting to me has to do with Special Olympics. For people who don't know, I am very active in you know, children that have problems, you know, children that have, you know, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, you name it, you know, underprivileged and special kids. And so Special Olympics to me is something that we really look at hard. And long story short, Special Olympics Kentucky has filed a federal lawsuit against the Louisville Metro Council. Apparently, Louisville Metro Council had illegally passed an ordinance, according to Special Olympics Kentucky, in December. And it's basically designed to end, you know, one of the primary sources of the Special Olympics nonprofit income in the city. For those who live in Louisville, you're used to seeing these things, these donation bins that are sitting around the city of Louisville. It's a bin that people can drop off used clothing and things like that. Well, apparently, the city of Louisville has decided that they're going to put limits on where the bins can be placed, and they're going to start charging $300 per bin per charity. So what that essentially means is that if you have you know, 10 of these bins in locations throughout the city for the year, it's going to cost you $3,000. Well, when you're dealing with a nonprofit who's trying to make money to help the underprivileged and the poor, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. So it's going to be interesting to going forward to see how this suit compares. But, you know, it's really a situation where how far does the Metro Council need to go? For starters, the Special Olympics Kentucky, the charity of Special Olympics Kentucky, has raised about $151,000 in Kentucky since it started using these bins a little less than 2 years ago. It has 90 bins in Louisville, and there's about 450 across the state. They also have somebody called Ohio Mills Corporation, you know, that maintains the bins and handles all the clothing and things like that. This clothing is actually sold in thrift stores. It's turned into rags. It's sold in bulk. It goes to the poor and developing nations. Ohio Mills and Special Olympics share the proceeds of any money that comes in on that. So they're both, you know, doing something to help people. We look at this, and one of the things here, you know, that the Metro Council is saying is that these bins have to be, you know, within a certain, I think it's 50 feet of the front door of buildings on any property where they're at. So if you're a business owner, you know, and you've got a parking lot of property, you might like that bin at the edge of your parking lot so it's not in the way of your customers or anything else. You know, now the Metro Council is saying it has to be within 50 feet of the front door. And it requires the owners, of course, a $300 registration fee and, you know, an annual $200 renewal. So now you're up to $500 for each bin. When you've got 90 bins, you know, that's $45,000, folks. That's $45,000 that these kids are going to do without. That makes no sense to me. So we need to start looking at this. There has been a lawsuit filed. I'm going to be watching this going forward to see how the Special Olympics makes out on this. Understanding, you know, that there's a lot of people out there. Well, the bins get full, so people sit stuff beside them, and it looks bad. Well, you know, it's not the business owner that's complaining. If the business owner was complaining and things like that, maybe we would have a serious discussion about, you know, about this stuff sitting for a day, maybe two, before it finally gets picked up because there's so many of them. But no, this is the Metro Council trying to find a way to get even more of your money. When they start charging, you know, up to $500 per bin, when you consider the registration fee and the annual renewal fee, you know, that's a lot of tax money or a lot of free money the Metro Council wants to get. And what are they doing it at? They're doing it on the backs of our special kids. Remember, we always talk on this show about doing it for the kids, but miraculously, it seems like every time we get into government, it's always about doing it to the kids. And at this time, they're doing it to the, you know, the special kids. And there's something really wrong with that. So we're going to continue paying close attention to this Special Olympics story. Looks like our good friend Ed Martin is here now. How are you, sir?
All right, sir.
Running a little bit late, are we?
I have to rehash it. I apologize for being a little late, but yeah, I get home and being the hayseed that I am sometimes, I got to get a fire started because the house ain't warm and mama ain't happy. Nobody's happy. So.
Well, you know, and here I thought you were just working hard at that business that Barack Obama built for you, which is what I told everybody. Now I find out that you're just scared to death of mama. But you know what? I've been married 29 years, so I can definitely relate to being scared of mama. You know, mama controls the show.
I'm not scared, you know. She's the boss, and I know it. So,
it's
you
okay.
Know.
That's
one of those things that I tell you, you know, the reason it keeps getting repeated is because it's true. If mama ain't happy, nobody's happy.
There you go. So you're scared of mama, and that's okay, brother. We all are. You know, I don't even know your wife, and I'm scared of her, okay? I think it's just a man thing, and it's a woman thing. It's just the way it is. It's okay to admit that, man. It's all right. We're not going to hold it against you.
working through it now.
There you go. We're going to move on just a little bit. You just missed a discussion about Special Olympics Kentucky suing Louisville. But here's another interesting story coming out. I'm sure you paid attention to, Ed. This story came out yesterday. MSD drainage fees. As the whole world knows, we have been very adamant about covering MSD and all the problems with MSD. The interest rate swaps, the derivatives, all the crazy stuff that's costing them money, and they continue coming to us for it. Well, lo and behold, what a lot of people weren't aware of what was going on with MSD, we have been, but James Bruggers over at the Courier-Journal apparently has decided he's going to play the good water boy for MSD again, trying to pass this new story out as being the right thing to do on behalf of MSD. But there's thousands of residents and businesses in Louisville to have never had to pay drainage fees to MSD. And now they're starting to get billed. Other businesses are having more added on to their bill. All this is based on what MSD considers a runoff surface, such as parking lots and rooftops. And here's the puzzling thing for me. Why is it that we have to pay a fee to MSD to have water run in my driveway, for example, into my backyard and settling in my backyard? Why do I have to pay MSD a drainage fee for my backyard soaking up that water?
Yeah, so basically, yeah, when it rains, MSD gets to bill you for the rain in a roundabout way. So.
Well, that's exactly it.
Yeah, I kind of got to wonder that. I'm gonna be watching my bill pretty closely because, you know, a lot of times, like I say, MSD doesn't have anything on me because I'm out in the sticks and have septic. So I'll be watching, but I've got some acreage, and it happens to be right next to a creek. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, if they try to bill me, I'm going to appeal it. I'll get a lawyer if I have to, because my position on that is you can kiss my ass, because the creek that runs adjacent to my property, as a matter of fact, you're dumping, that's what's one of the sewage treatment plant goes into that creek, you know. I'm thinking, wait a minute, I should be billing you for when the water comes up because it's coming onto my property. Fight me.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because we're finding out a lot of things. It's funny you say that, because take a business called Marine Sales and Service, for example. They're located on River Road. These guys' drainage assessment in the past has been about $800 a year. This last year, they had a reassessment done, and now they're increased. Check this out. Their drainage assessment went from $800 a year to $14,000 a year. Not $1,400, folks. $14,000 a year in December is what Marine Sales and Service. So they went from $800 to $14,000. How do you tell a business something like this? I mean, you know, you have a business to make money. You base your prices on your expenses. And here these guys just got a bill for $14,000. How are they going to pass this on to the customer?
Well,
you know?
Not only that, but that particular company, I would encourage people to pay attention to the name of the road that they're on. Called River Road.
What funny you should bring
the river. and in that article, they actually said it. They said that ours doesn't drain into the MSD pipes or anything. It drains into the river.
Right. And see, and that's what makes it so amazing, man, because they're not the only ones. Marine Sales and Service, now their president says that what they're going to have to do is just cut employee bonuses. So they're going to take the employee bonuses to pay the new drainage fee. So now the employees are going to do without money. But you just mentioned a good point about River Road, because there's at least three businesses who are now filing a lawsuit against MSD because their drainage goes straight into the river from the back of their property. It doesn't go through an MSD basin. It doesn't go through an MSD drainage ditch. It goes straight from their property straight to the river. And they're going to be charged assessment fees. So, you know, all these things that we've been talking about, MSD, for a long time now, we even told everybody this was going to happen once Greg Heisman came over from Louisville Water Company and decided to play this game, and it's exactly what's going on. MSD is calling this a revenue enhancement program. It actually started in 2009, but over the last year, since Greg Heisman took over, it's like an enhancement program on steroids. I mean, it really is. This is phenomenal to me. What is this going to do to our economy, Ed, because we continue talking about the cost of doing business, primarily small business, you know, over and over and over. Louisville continues trying to sell the whole world on them being a business-friendly atmosphere. What does this tell us? What does this tell anybody looking to do business here?
Well, I have to be honest. It's, you know, we joke sometimes, Southern Indiana is open for business. I think you're going to be looking, you know, at large. It's not so much small businesses, because a lot of small businesses may be able to make do with it, you know, and might not have a real big assessment because they have a small footprint. But large manufacturers, you know, the kind of guys that would come in and buy acreage, like let's look at the city trying to sell that acreage in the West End now that they pulled down the old Brown Williamson buildings at, you know, 14 acres or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Who the hell wants to buy 14 acres now?
See, I'm totally with you.
You just bought 14 acres worth of drainage fees.
Exactly. I'm totally with you on that. I mean, you know, according to Steve Emley, who's the MSD chief engineer, you know, because everybody in their service area benefits from the services they provide, whether they're personal property benefits or not, they still should have a fair and equitable distribution of these costs. Explain this to me. If my property isn't costing MSD a dime, why should I have to pay MSD a dime for service I'm not receiving?
Yeah.
You know, this is the main thing. I'm hoping that this ends up in a federal lawsuit. I'm hoping that this brings up everything with this illegal consent decree. And I say illegal because I never consented to it. No citizen in Louisville consented to it. This was MSD making a voluntary consent decree with EPA that put us in a position since 2003 with this project DRI that is just literally, if you talk about flooding, they're flooding our homes with emptiness because all the money they're taking out of it. It is totally incredible to me. In addition, they raised their fees 6.5% a year. They raised them over 30% back in 2006 with the Metro Council approval. Once again, we're at a point here where we can see that there's no accountability, and now they're going after money that they're not even entitled to. Where does this stop in government, Ed?
You got me. I mean, like I say, it's to the point of ridiculousness when you've got a company whose property drains into the river. I mean, basically what you're getting here is they're taxing rain.
Well, that's it. How do you tax Mother Nature?
Just when you thought it couldn't get any more ridiculous, now they're taxing rain. Now
right.
They're taxing companies that say, hey, you know, I want to come in. I want to buy up some blighted acreage or something, or some unused acreage. Oh, I want to build a factory.
Right.
Yeah. Like, okay, well, hey, guess what? You know, it's going to cost you $2,000 a month for when it rains.
Well, that's it. And here's another fascinating thing. Did you know that MSD is also responsible for roads? MSD is responsible for city roads. Did you know that? Apparently, they build them and maintain them because, according to this chief engineer, Emily, he said he understands people are angry because it's a fee they didn't have before. But he goes on to say that for the last 25 years, those people have been subsidized by others while they're still using city roads and other services protected by MSD. Now, when did MSD start subsidizing our roads? Ain't that what we pay taxes on our gas for? Isn't that why we have road funds and things like that that already come out of our tax money? So, you know, these kind of little statements prove a lot.
I guess what he's saying is we should fall down and worship MSD because if it wasn't for them, all the roads would flood when it rains or something. I guess, you know, it's not as if we couldn't design a road and build a road where it actually wouldn't flood all the time, you know. Couldn't do that without MSD, that's for sure.
I am so glad that you made that comment, Ed, because I'll tell you why. Out here in the Southwest, when it rains real hard, we flood all the time. Our roads, you're right. Our roads and our streets, we literally watch thousands and thousands and thousands of gallons of raw drainage come right up through our water meters and everything else, come right up through our streets through everything. This is stuff that just floods and takes over the streets. It comes up from underneath. So they're not doing a good job with rainwater runoff anyway that we're paying for. You know, when you talk about being environmentally conscious, when you have raw sewage being pumped up from the ground because it's raining outside, MSD isn't doing anything about it. MSD says, well, we have a sealed system. Well, if you have a sealed system, folks, guess what? It's leaking. It's broken. Why haven't you addressed this for years? Talk to Ray Pierce and Paul Holliger over at Stop It. They have been involved in this for many, many years. Hundreds of thousands of gallons of sewage come straight up through the streets from the rainwater and everything else because MSD isn't doing their job. But now they want to take more money, and they're supposedly in charge of city roads and other services now. So explain to me why they're not doing their job. This is a story that's going to get real interesting going forward, Ed, because I tell you what, the fact that he actually brought up city roads just reinforces something else that we've been talking about at LouisvillePolitics.com and at Springfield.com for many years. And that is the fact that MSD is subsidizing Louisville through an illegal tax scam, in my opinion, because they do give Louisville money to build sidewalks. They give money to help with roads. They give money to help with all kinds of parking lots. MSD gives money to the city of Louisville to pay for all of these things that we are already paying taxes for. They increase their rates 6.5% a year, and they give that money to Louisville. That is an illegal tax. That is why Stop It, boys. Stop illegal taxes. Ray Pierce and Paul Holliger have been involved for many years. But that's exactly what they do. So this is just another example by making that statement that they take care of city roads. This is another example of what we've been talking about for years. Hopefully these guys on River Road will be able to get this in a federal court and start holding them accountable. We'll see about that going forward. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, we're going to shift gears. And I tell you what we're going to shift to. A lot of things going on right now. Great news coming out of the Kentucky Senate Committee today. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about what the feds are doing to your automobiles. And we'll get into a little bit about Mr. Obama's pick for CIA director. You may be startled when you hear this one. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Hey, everybody. Gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can.
The government can.
And who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the trees? All the fees, the government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government can, cause they mix it up with lies and make it all this good.
Make it all this good.
The government takes everything we make to pay for all of their solutions. Healthcare, climate change, pollution. Throw away the Constitution. Founding fathers roll over in their grave. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government can, cause they mix it up with lies and make it all taste good.
Make it all taste good.
The government takes everything we make. They're power hungry and malicious. Their economics are fictitious. Soon we'll have to eat our dishes. Oh, who can be a failure?
In so many ways.
And instead of getting fired, hey, we'll give ourselves a raise. The government.
Tell you folks, I love that song. I really, really, really do. The Government Can by comedian Tim Hawkins. You can find that song and many others at timhawkins.net. You know, Ed, we talk about the Special Olympics now going to have to sue the state of Kentucky or the Louisville Metro Council. We're talking about MSD and this crazy ass story they've got in the Courier Journal this weekend where James Bruggers is apparently playing rah-rah shish-kumbah with MSD like he is known to do. To say that I don't have any respect for Bruggers when it comes to reporting on environmental situations would be an understatement. But, you know, there is always some good news somewhere. And today I think we finally got some good news. Senator Rand Paul testified.
There you are. Hello.
Hello, Ed.
Hello.
Yeah, Ed Martin.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Paul Holliger. Hey, listen, Ed, I don't think Ed Springsteen is aware that he's got an audio problem there in the studio. So.
Okay. Yeah, well, I never know if it's me or if it's him, so.
No, this case is him.
Usually comes up when he drops the C word. He drops the conspiracy word, and it's like, zap.
it's the black helicopters again. So.
Yeah.
So where was he going with this topic about Rand Paul?
Well, I think it has to do with the hemp bill is where he was going with the good news. I know that's where he wanted to go, and of course, you know, they keep getting closer and closer to hemp, and heck, even the media's on it now after 30 years of Gatewood telling them how it was, so, you know, who knows? We can get some people educated and get them to understanding that, you know, hemp is, you know, some people view it as a savior type crop. You know, it's a crop. it's silly. I look at it like I don't get all excited. Oh, it's hemp. It's going to save the farmers. It's going to do that. But you know, it's just another crop. It's something people can make money at with a nominal investment. And if they're making money,
it's incredible. Can you guys hear me now?
We can hear you now.
We can hear you now.
That's incredible. I don't know what happened. Everything was showing fine here in the studio. It didn't show one glitch at all.
You didn't say conspiracy, and you still disappeared. I don't get
that's it. That's incredible because it didn't even show a glitch. Usually I can see the glitch right here in the studio, and it did not. Essentially where I'm going with industrial hemp is this. We can't get these guys to agree on anything. You know, we've been talking about industrial hemp for many, many years. The late Gatewood Galbraith has been talking about marijuana and industrial hemp as a combination for at least 30 years before he died. You know, well, now finally we've got Jamie Comer, the Kentucky Ag Commissioner. You've got Rand Paul from Washington in here to discuss it. And if there's any one thing that we finally got a bipartisan agreement on, because this was a unanimous vote, is to force illegal hemp discussion on the full Senate floor. Is that a plus or a minus, guys?
No, it's a plus. I mean, it falls into the category of, hey, guys, welcome to the world where Reaper Madness is fiction. You know,
mm-hmm.
Seriously, hey, we still have places that are called hemp ridge. We still, you know, hemp is a fibrous crop, as I was telling Paul. It's like, you know, on one hand, you got people saying, oh, hemp's going to save the, you know, oh, it's so great. And I'm like, well, you know, let's just not be emotional about it. Let's just say, okay, hemp's an industrial crop. Hemp's a crop that farmers can grow and make money at. Why aren't we doing that? Now, I don't know.
Well,
I don't know how much money it's going to make. I don't know how profitable it's going to be. But you know what? It makes no sense whatsoever. It's a fiber crop. It's an oil crop. Grow it.
Well, let me ask you this, because here's an interesting thing. Paul, you were getting ready to comment. Go ahead. I'll wait a second.
Yeah. Look, guys, I think that there's probably a whole lot more going on with this issue than what we know about. The fact that they're openly discussing this issue is a good thing, okay? But let me run a parallel, if you will, with the alcohol industry, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The distilled spirits industry. Now, the distilled spirits industry is heavily regulated. The primary reason why the feds ended up getting into distilled busting and cracking down on speakeasies all those many decades ago was because they were not deriving any tax revenue on the product. In other words, yep. Independent business people were able to concoct this stuff, sell it for a nice profit, and didn't have a whole lot of government interference.
Right.
Now, guys, what if this whole industrial hemp issue is now coming to light and is now in open forums for discussion because the powers that be have finally begun lining up their little dominoes so that they can be the first ones to take advantage of any business opportunities that roll down the pipe? Remember, tobacco. We've heard a lot about tobacco in Kentucky
mm-hmm.
as being a very important cash crop for small farmers, okay? But weren't they limited as to how many acres of tobacco they could plant? Isn't that kind of a regulated crop? And
well,
I see I see the same thing happening with industrial hemp, guys.
Well, there's going to be some regulation here. For one thing, anybody that gets a license has got to plant a minimum of 10 acres. So you're going to have a minimum requirement to plant. You're also going to have to be licensed annually. You're going to have to go through a background check by the ag department. You know, all these things are designed to keep things on the up and up. You're also going to be required to, you know, give a list of who your customers are. So all that makes sense. So they're doing things to do this. What's really interesting to me here, though, is you've got John Yarmuth, who said he thinks it's a long shot at the federal level to get Barack Obama to sign a waiver. But Yarmuth and Rand Paul and Tom Massey are all in agreement that they will try to get Barack Obama to sign a federal waiver if we can get this passed at the state level. The interesting thing is going to be, I don't think it's the Senate that's going to be the problem. You've got Greg Stumbo in the House, and there you go. We've often talked about David Williams being the guy who stops everything at the Senate level. Well, then you've got his counterpart in the House, Greg Stumbo. Stumbo does not want industrial hemp. He does not want industrial hemp in any way, shape, or form.
And why is that?
Well, he's trying to play the logic, and he's lying through his butt. It has nothing to do with this. But he's trying to say that it would have to be government subsidized to be productive and to make money, which is a lie. You know, they subsidize businesses every day by giving them tax breaks. You can give tax incentives to people to do it. It's not going to hurt anything. As long as you bring in something, it's better than nothing. And he seems to think that Jamie Comer and others are lying when they say that this is literally going to create thousands of jobs. It very possibly could. What is even more interesting, though, is the arguments against it. Because, you know, industrial hemp seeds actually produce less than 1% THC. For everybody who still don't know, and I can't believe there's anybody alive that wouldn't, THC is the active ingredient in marijuana that gets you high. Marijuana has between 3 and 15% THC content, and that's what gets you high. Depending on how much content it is, the higher you're going to get. Industrial hemp has less than 1%. You can smoke a ton of this stuff and never crave a White Castle. I've said that many times. You know, but what's interesting is the Kentucky State Police Commissioner, Rodney Brewer, testified at the Kentucky Senate Committee, said that they had problems with enforcement concerns, but he actually tried to say that someone could get high off of industrial hemp if they smoked enough of it. Now, that is one of the biggest fallacies out there, and to think that we have a state police commissioner who would blatantly lie like that is even more disturbing to me than the whole argument of industrial hemp versus marijuana. And it's really interesting because former CIA director James Woolsey, he actually testified on the bill today, and former CIA director James Woolsey testified that Brewer's claim is basically saying you can get drunk on O'Doul's beer, and as everybody knows, O'Doul's beer is non-alcoholic. So it's fascinating. Why would the Kentucky State Police lie like this? Why does their commissioner feel an obligation to lie to the people about law enforcement things when he clearly either has no clue or he's being paid to manipulate?
I would speculate that the police are using this as an excuse so that they don't have to actually learn how to differentiate between THC-laced marijuana mm-hmm. and relatively non-THC industrial hemp. Frankly, I think it boils down to that.
Well, I totally agree with you there, but the reality is, I mean, there is a difference in them. You can usually spot the difference. I mean, there is actually a physical difference. Are they similar? Yes. Are they exact? No. And that's the thing. But to sit out here and try to plant this basic falsehood really reminds me of the days of William Randolph Hearst, and trying to protect his timber industry, you know, aided and abetted by his good friend Rockefeller in the Congress, you know, when it came out with all the marijuana is bad, it's a gateway drug, it's going to kill you. You know, they came out with all this crazy stuff so they could get timber money. That's when we lost industrial hemp. It was a sad state of affairs. And here we are 70 years later, you know, and we've got somebody actually in a position of authority trying to use that logic. Even John Yarmuth, said that even though he believes passing the federal legislation and getting a waiver are long shots, he also believes that law enforcement with limited budgets, because that's the big thing, they want to complain about their budgets. He also believes law enforcement with limited budgets would concentrate more on abuse of pain pills rather than industrial hemp. And quite frankly, that's where they need to be anyway.
pain pills are the problem.
No doubt about it. I mean, yeah, I don't agree with Yarmouth a lot, but that's exactly right. You know, it just cracks me up. You know, I don't smoke marijuana, and I'd probably go ballistic if I found out my kids were doing it or anything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the fact of the matter is I'm not so sure that marijuana is killing people in Kentucky. I'm sure if you smoke enough, you probably have some lung disorders. But you know, that's not where the problem is. That's not where the criminal, you know, that's not where the criminal element is. But that's not where you have the abuse, where we're number one. I mean,
right.
It might be a gateway drug if somebody's is already predisposed to go that direction. But
you can say that about anything, yeah.
Yeah, this is not the problem. This is, you know, it's like, hey, and I've suggested to people at the ag department, it's like, hey, you know, you want to placate these cops? It's like, fine, you know, whether you take the fees and the royalties or the taxes that come from the sale of it, you know, mm-hmm. if this cop first be viable, give a percentage of it to the drug eradication or the drug task force for the state, or take some of the proceeds and put them towards the pension, since our lawmakers can't seem to figure out how to fund that damn thing. It's like, you know, just like kind of like the keep money for keys money for, from the lottery that goes to education. It's like, look, if it is profitable, let's just dedicate the funds, dedicate a percent of it to so the police can hire more cops and pay more overtime, buy another chopper or two, and go out and find the illegal stuff. But
I don't even like that idea. I don't even like that idea. The police don't need more money. They need to do the job they're supposed to be doing instead of screwing around with little crap like they pulled on me last July. If they were doing their job, you wouldn't have a problem. They've got the money. They've got the resources. They just either get too damn lazy to do their job the way they're supposed to be doing it, or they want to pick and choose when and how to do their job. And that's a problem for me today. And believe me, folks, you need to listen to last Tuesday and Wednesday show, and you'll understand why I'm going and letting you know that right now. But there's going to be a lot more coming forward than that in the next 30 days, I promise you there. But even Rand Paul, here's the thing for me. Industrial hemp is already being imported in the United States. We import industrial hemp from Canada, Europe, wherever they grow it at. We use industrial hemp in the U.S. We import it. So why is it okay to import it and use it for clothing or whatever in the world they want to use it for? Even Rand Paul, in his testimony today, told everybody that he was wearing a shirt made with hemp, but he bought it in Canada. So why is it okay to purchase hemp products and import them into the U.S., but it's not okay to grow it here, create jobs, create new taxes, create new revenue at a time when we need it most? What is the problem here?
Well, it's just the typical, you know, as they say in business, the seven words of any dying company is, but we've always done it this way. And that's where we're at with this right now. It's just, but we've always done it this way. We've always treated hemp like it was marijuana. You know, we've always done this, we've always done that.
Well, see, we didn't always do that. That's the problem. We didn't always.
Well, not always. But anybody that's alive, as far, you know, generations removed.
Okay.
But I just, you know, I look at it and it's like they're just used to doing it that way. You know, hemp, marijuana, hemp, and they get it in their head, just like Bobby Coleslaw did. You know, she couldn't make it, it's the same thing. It's like, it's not even close. I just think it's just, I don't know if we're going to get it passed this year, but eventually the dialogue is heating up.
Well, I think the House is going to stop it. But at the very least, once it gets a full-blown Senate vote, then we'll at least finally, once it gets a full-blown Senate vote, then we can get accountability on individual members. And that's really what I'm after. Whether it passes or not this year, who's to say? It probably won't. But at least we'll have a starting point to get accountability. We can start working against these guys in elections to get what we need to move Kentucky forward. Because quite frankly, prior to the William Randolph Hearst game back in the 30s and early 40s, quite frankly, Kentucky was a big industrial hemp producer. You know, and even citizens like me and you were being paid by the U.S. government during World War II. We were being paid to grow industrial hemp in our backyards that they would buy from us and convert to rope and other things that they needed for our soldiers and the war movement. So industrial hemp was never the problem until you got a couple of greedy guys like William Randolph Hearst and the Rockefellers, who he bought in a daggone Congress so that they could protect their timber interest. That's what's incredible about this whole argument.
Well, and the DuPont family with synthetic fibers, yeah.
Very good. Yeah, you got the nylon industry and everything else. Paul, weigh in.
You're kind of swerved right into the area that I was commenting on anyway, and that is the powers that be apparently are lining up their tools in order to take maximum advantage of any legislation that does enable the growing and production and manufacturing of industrial hemp. And so, you know, you're talking about William Randolph Hearst, and way back in the 20s and 30s, I don't see a whole lot of difference between what happened then by the wealthy ruling elite, if you will, and what's happening now. I really do believe that's what's going on. I really do. I think that these people have gotten a lot of the pieces of their puzzle already lined up. They just need a few more pieces, and that this industrial hemp, while it shows great promise for small Kentucky farmers, I think a lot of small Kentucky farmers are going to be left on the roadside.
I
think you're right. I think unless, of course, they make donations to key lawmakers and stuff. I think the quotas and everything and licensing fees and all that, I think you're right to a degree. I think these stumbos and stuff are saying, not yet. I haven't figured out exactly who or how I'm going to squeeze them, you know, in Pike County or wherever.
Well, I see a lot of this. Go ahead.
Do either one of you guys know where the Kentucky Farm Bureau stands on industrial hemp? Are
you know,
enthusiastically in support of, or what?
I cannot tell you today whether they are for or against. I know at one time they were against, but that's been a while back. I don't know that they are for or against today. It's been a while. You know, I can find out fairly quickly. You know, but I'm not sure where they stand today on that. But I know that the majority of Kentuckians favor industrial hemp. Of course, the majority of Kentuckians also favor medical marijuana. You know, and I had a conversation with somebody today on that as well. It doesn't matter whether you want, you know, medical marijuana approved or not. If you want to be California or Colorado or whoever, one way or the other, but you know, the real thing is, here you're in a conservative state. You know, we've got to understand, everything in Kentucky moves 20 years behind everything else. Just ask, you know, that's what Mark Twain once said. So when we look at that, when we look at that into play, we have to look at this particular situation as a baby step. If we get industrial hemp, and I think we will, if we get industrial hemp, then that'll be a good thing moving forward. Once we can prove that it's safe and effective and everything else like we know it is, you know, then we can open up discussion in other areas. But it's always been the all or nothing mentality of these people who want marijuana, you know, completely legal, that has always destroyed any discussion about industrial hemp. They didn't like the argument I gave them, but my argument is, let's get industrial hemp. Let's take a step in the right direction and see where we can go from there. You know what I mean? I don't get their argument. You know, it's all or nothing, but that's always what's destroyed us and kept us back. So, you know, from what I understand, Paul, to answer your question about Kentucky Farm Bureau, the American Farm Bureau supports industrial hemp. The Kentucky Farm Bureau, I know that Jamie Comer went to the Kentucky Farm Bureau convention and talked to them about that. You know, I'm not sure what the outcome of that was. The last I heard, you know, when he got through at the convention, they hadn't taken a position at that time. But we'll see what that is going forward. I'll do some more research on it and try to get an answer on that tomorrow night, all right? But the American Farm Bureau does support it.
The thing is you and I have been all for industrial hemp for years now.
Mm-hmm,
sure. And we're both fairly well-versed in it. It is a durable weed. It's what it is.
It really is.
And the thing is it doesn't take fertilizer. Nothing eats it. Bugs don't bother it. Livestock, you know, animals don't bother it. It actually regenerates and improves the soil that it's in. But the thing is if it doesn't work, it's not like a tobacco crop or a corn crop or anything. Mm-hmm. You put it out. If, you know, if it turns out there's no market for it, oh, well. You can mow it down if you want. Or if you don't, that's fine. It's actually an indigenous plant, not unlike you know, a lot of people don't know bamboo is indigenous to Kentucky, certain species of it. Just let it go. You know, it's just a weed. It really is. It's a weed with a lot of fiber in it. That's, everybody needs to just relax. That's what it is.
Well,
so,
if you got a lot of fiber, man, relaxing is kind of taking care of that for you, ain't it?
Hello. You can bend it on a hemp stalk if you want. I'm not going there.
Well, you know, there really is a lot more. There really is a lot more going on than it.
Actually, in deference, I'll tell you what, to be real honest, one time, just because, you know, Gateway was a friend of the show and stuff, I actually found some hemp milk one time.
Oh, awesome.
And I had a sip of it. And I will never drink that garbage. And that was the nasty. I might as well have been drinking turpentine with white paint in it. I took one gulp of that, and I was like, oh, you know, who in their right mind would drink this crap?
Well, you know, anymore, that's what I think about pasteurized milk. So,
if you want to gnaw on a hemp stalk so you're regular, you go right ahead. I got a feeling it's going to be nasty.
Well, anymore, that's what I think about the pasteurized milk. When you start researching all of that, and we've been researching that quite a bit, hope to have a story on that in the very near future about what's going on with the real milk and the raw milk producers trying to be put out of business. It's disturbing when you realize what they actually do with pasteurized milk and why raw milk is so much better. But more disturbing than that right now, there's really more stories going on in industrial hemp right now, folks. We've got all kinds of them. We have got a story out that came out through WND early this morning, and it's very, very startling. Everybody knows that we are in the middle of interviewing for a CIA director. John Brennan has been testifying before Congress and things like that. Now we find John Brennan, Barack Obama, CIA director, is a Muslim. He converted to Islam many years ago in Saudi Arabia. And there's a great little YouTube video going around, and I want you guys to look it up on YouTube because I really don't have time to play his whole six-minute spiel on here, where he is talking, you know, in Arabic, you know, and talking about what a great faith, you know, being a Muslim is and Islam is and everything else. Now, here's my thing. I don't know how you guys feel about this, but since Barack Obama has become president, we've had all of these problems. We've got Libya. We know there was incredible mistakes made there. But are these mistakes or are these by design? Because the security of this nation is paramount, period. It's the one reason we have a Congress in the first place, is we expect these guys to uphold the Constitution, and we expect them to defend our borders first. But since Barack Obama has come into office, we have seen an infiltration of the Muslim Brotherhood in White House. You've got Valerie Jarrett and her illegal ties to Muslims, who's essentially running the whole show. Barack Obama is a figurehead. We've got all these Muslims taking over. How does this happen? And how can we sit here and seriously take a guy like John Brennan and consider him for ultimately the top security job in the United States of America when he himself is a Muslim and thinks that Islam is the greatest thing in the world? And we're going to make this guy the CIA director? How does that happen? What do you all think about that?
Well, me, I don't care. I mean, you're a religion, you know, I don't care if they're Muslim, Jewish, or anything. Yeah, you know, let's face it. No matter what religion they are, you're going to find a way. They're going to find something about them. You know, it's just like you did with Kennedy as a Catholic. It's like, oh, your allegiance is going to be to the Pope. It's like, no, it's not. Or, you know, what would happen? We'd be having the same conversation, different tone, if we had somebody of Hebrew descent going for that, and say, oh my God, you're gonna put a displaced Israeli in there, he's gonna flatten all the Arabs. So, you know, faith not a problem for me. And yet we've got it now. The contradiction there is, you know, everybody says, oh, he's a Muslim. This guy's all for drones, man. He may be a Muslim, but he's one that sits back and says, I'm all for drones. Let's kill Muslims. You know, it's basically what he's saying. Let's kill terrorists, but they tend to be Muslims. So he's like, whether he's Muslim or not, he apparently doesn't have a problem taking other Muslims out.
Well, yes and no, but where's he taking them out at? I mean, that's the thing for me. I don't trust this. You know, now this can make sound, you know, as bad as it wants to sound. I really don't care. But when I look at the attacks on American soil, when I look at 9/11 and I look at everything else, forget all the hype. But, you know, when I've got Muslims in this country, Islamists in this country, saying they want to kill me just because I'm not a member of Islam, when I've got radical terrorists who are Islam coming into my country and blowing up the World Trade Center, when I've got all these different factors in play, I've got to admit I'm very alarmed by that. When I've got this guy who believes in drone attacks and who also wrote the policy on drone attacks that essentially lets them apply drone attacks to American citizens, which we talked about last week, you know, I've got some serious problems with this. You know, our military has serious problems with this. So what gives, Paul?
I'm going to have to diverge a little bit from Ed Martin's point of view on this faith-based stuff. I am not, first of all, let me give you this disclaimer. I am not the world's leading authority on the major religions that inhabit societies across this globe, okay? But I do know a couple of things about the major religions. And the number one thing that differentiates Islam from the other major religions is that a basic fundamental tenet of Islam is subjugation. You either come on board or you will be subjugated to second-class status. Mm-hmm. I can't think of another major religion on this planet that requires, that has as a tenet, subjugation of all non-believers. Now, looking back in history, I think we've seen what has happened when a religion tries to do that. The Catholic way of doing things way back during the Middle Ages, some people want to blame the Catholic Crusades as the reason why the Muslim world today are still so anti-Christian. If you recall, the Catholics attempted to literally wipe out the Islamic faith way back when. And,
sure.
And they, at that time, kind of adopted the very same philosophy that Islam has today. That is, you become a Christian, or we're going to, if you're lucky to stay alive, we will subjugate you to second-class status. So I think as a philosophy, I think it's a pretty bad philosophy, okay? But I'm like you, Ed, and that is, I don't go to sleep at night having to worry about whether somebody who's of the Hindu faith or the Shinto faith or of the Presbyterian faith, I don't have to worry about those people deciding that if they get a chance, they're going to kill me. I don't have to be concerned about Muslims and people of the Islamic faith because that is a fundamental precept in their religion.
Well, and that's very true, and it's really disturbing because, I mean, you know, former FBI Islam expert John Guandolo, he is the one who has put the story out to let everybody know who Brennan really is. Nobody knew this until this story came out. He reported it to WND. But he's a former expert on Islam, FBI expert on Islam, John Guandolo. He's been telling everybody for years now that the federal government is being infiltrated by members of the radical Muslim Brotherhood. We know this. We understand this. Valerie Jarrett and everybody else, including Barack Obama, bring Muslim terrorists into the White House for visits. Muslim terrorists, known terrorists. And now we're going to put John Brennan in charge? I mean, this is really disturbing to me. To listen to Guandolo, he says he's got a three-part argument that says we cannot confirm Brennan. And he points out that Brennan has interwoven his life both professionally and personally with known terrorists. He runs around with known terrorists. All right, he has overseen, he's approved, and he has encouraged other people to bring known leaders of Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood into government positions of power to advise the U.S. government on counterterrorism strategy. So when we look at this, Hamas is a terrorist network, and we want to allow them to advise the U.S. government on counterterrorism? It's a self-serving purpose. Guandolo also asserted that Brennan has proven through his own comments publicly that he is clueless and grossly ignorant of Al-Qaeda's strategy. I think we've got enough history of that over the last several years that Guandolo simply doesn't know anything about these extremists. And, you know, and of course he converted to Islam. But, you know, it's disturbing that this guy runs around with known terrorists. That is the key here, folks. He runs around with known terrorists. He thinks it's great. He wants to bring Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood into high power government operations. You know, we've got terrorists that invade the White House at will. Whenever they want to come in, Barack Obama brings them in and smiles while he's doing it. I don't think there is any greater act of treason by a U.S. president than the people that he allows to come into the White House. And he's never been impeached or brought up on treason charges and won't be. You know, this is a disturbing thing. How can anybody seriously take John Brennan as a potential CIA director? I just can't understand that logic or that mindset. You know, so it's very, very interesting to me. And the fact that this is still going on, the fact that this story came out today, thank goodness, because at least we've got a starting point. I personally think that he's going to be confirmed because the politicians don't care anything more about anything but political power. They don't care about America. They've proven that over and over and over. But this is disturbing. We're going to watch this going forward at LouisvillePolitics.com and right here on the MVM Radio Network. But, you know, and he's also anti-Israel. So whether you like Israel or not, and I've been very critical of Israel and the U.S. commitment with our dollars to Israel, you know, but the fact does remain that Israel is still an ally. And you don't piss off your allies and go against terrorists and help terrorists infiltrate an ally. That just defeats the whole purpose of having an ally. So I've got some major problems with that. We are fast running out of time. Paul, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. I really, really do. And I look forward to hearing from you tomorrow. Mr. Martin, final thoughts.
Final thoughts. You know, generally I like to do the national, but for right now I'm personally much more interested, and I would encourage people to get more engaged on the local level with the MSD thing. I mean, that, you know, I'm a small business owner. I understand, you know, I'm a taxpayer. I understand you got to pay taxes. But at some point when you run up against a quasi-government agency that is trying to figure out literally how to tax rain, you know, and they're trying to assign a premium to what almost isn't even a basic service. I mean, you say to somebody, hey, look, you know, I'm going to pay my road taxes, I'm going to pay my business taxes, I'm going to pay my sewage tax, I'm going to pay my water bills and all that stuff. I'm going to pay all my bills. Let's just not have the roads flood, if that's possible, yet design them properly. And then you got MSD coming in saying, oh, well, you know, we're responsible for no flooding and this, that, and the other. I mean, and they're trying to tax rain. And that's just one that I am going to, you know, plus I'm a property owner, I'm going to be watching that real close. And I think people need to get alarmed at it because, let's face it, if cities broke, states are broke, federal government's broke, this is a tax. That's all this is a tax. And they're not calling it a tax. They're trying to say it's a fee, but, you know, it's a tax. And people need to get pissed off about it. These sneaky, I mean, I'm going to say it, these sneaky bastards are trying to come in and say, oh, well, this is a drainage fee, you know. No, it's a tax. It's a tax. And they're going to start enforcing it and raising it on people who, you know, have conducted their business square, fair and square for a long, long time. And now they're going into palm under. And I just think, I think Southern Indiana sometimes looks better and better when you've got this stuff going on. But, you know, it's got to be watched. And it's just like Obamacare. It's a tax. And people, you pay 40% of your income in taxes, pretty much no matter what bracket you're in. Sooner or later you're going to get pissed off about it. And this is how they do it. You know, they add a little, you know, so you make a couple thousand a month. You know what? They're going to come in, they're going to take 20 of it. It rained a lot this month. They're going to take a percent of what you made. That's essentially what they're doing. And they are chipping away at the American public. I mean, getting ahead? Forget about it. You know, your employer can't get ahead anymore if they're going to tax them $14,000 a year for rain. And I just think people just need to wake up and getting boiled like a frog, whether it's, you know, it's just one small fee, one small tax, your 6% rate increase on your water bill, your, you know, whatever, your 6% increase on your school tax. I mean, they are boiling us like frogs. And every once in a while, people rise up and they go, hey, hey, hey. But, you know, sooner or later, somebody needs to sit down and figure out all these little bitty taxes and stuff. God forbid, should you actually eat somewhere within a mile of the Yum Center, because you're going to pay a fee on that, too. But, yeah, they're blowing us like frogs, and people need to wake the hell up.
Well, I can totally agree with people need to wake up. And you're right. I mean, all politics start at local level, folks. So you've got to get involved. This MSD story here in Louisville is nothing new. This is something we've been covering since at least 2006, very publicly since at least 2008 through edspringston.com. You can go to that website and do a search for MSD and bring up everything we've done. You know, we've pointed out all of the things. We've done everything we can to set the stage to hold these guys accountable. MSD can't stand us. City government in Louisville can't stand us. They do everything they can to shut me down because they don't like the fact that we're telling the truth. But all politics are local. MSD here in Louisville is just the symptom. It is not the cause. The cause is greed. The cause is greed. When the city can't tax anymore and the state can't tax anymore because they can't get it passed on a ballot, then they start raising these fees, these service fees, these drainage fees, all these different things that MSD calls them are nothing more than, like Ed just said, illegal taxes, which is why people like Ray Pierce and Paul Holliger over at Stop Invisible Taxes or Stop It exist. That's what they do. They fight this for you. And we need you guys to get involved and start holding them accountable as well. That's not the only thing. When you get into local issues, one of the big stories going on right now, we didn't cover it tonight, I hope to cover it tomorrow night, involves current Metro Council person Barbara Shanklin, who is up on ethics charges, and our tax money are paying her legal fees. The same thing happened with Judy Green, who was ultimately impeached. I should say the late Judy Green, who was ultimately impeached for ethics charges and everything else. But we get stuck paying for these things as well. These guys can do anything they want to do because they know they've got an unlimited tax account to draw from. There's a great story out today, Courier Journal. Check it out if you can. I don't like to give these guys credit much, but Sheldon Schaefer did a story today that came out. Kentucky House Speaker Pro Tem Larry Clark has introduced legislation co-sponsored by Democrat Charlie Miller to prohibit Louisville from paying legal fees for Metro Council members or any other Metro official named in an ethics complaint. So the state is finally getting involved to try to stop Louisville taxpayers from getting stuck for the illegal doings of our Metro officials. So that's actually a step in the right direction. I can't stand Larry Clark. And I know that what he's doing is politically motivated, and I'll get into more of that tomorrow night. But at this particular juncture, it's also the right thing to do. So, you know, give a man credit.
Well, I think they should expand it beyond just Metro Council. That should apply to the state people, too.
Well, it will.
Larry Clark ever gets sued someday.
It will. Trust me. This is just a stepping stone. But all politics are local. We have to start somewhere. Take what we can get. Get involved in the industrial hemp issue. Call your House member. Call your House of Representatives member. Tell them you want them to get industrial hemp passed in Kentucky. Don't let them off the hook because Greg Stumbo said so. Make the House accountable. Call your senator today. Tell him to vote yes on industrial hemp. You want to move Kentucky forward? Get involved. Make a difference. You want to move Louisville forward? Get involved and make a difference. The bottom line is this is your government, your way of life is at risk. Until you get involved, nothing ever changes. We'll do our part. We've been doing it for years, and we'll continue doing it for years to come. But now you're seeing the stage get set. You're seeing the doors being cracked open. Take advantage of that cracked door. Push that son of a bitch open and go for it as far as you can possibly go. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, of course, Ed, we'll be back. We'll get into some more things like the ethics fees we were just talking about and a few other little stories I'll leave as a surprise just because I can. Mr. Martin, thank you so much. We'll see you tomorrow night.
All right, sir. See you tomorrow.
All right. The rest of you guys have a great night. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Thank you so much for joining in.